Change. Thanks everybody for attending, and for those who haven't shown up yet, well, hopefully they'll find their way here. So I'm hoping that everybody here has attended the intro upgrade session that I did on Monday at 2 p.m. If you haven't, I'd highly recommend you go and review the video file that they've made available for it. I'm going to be basing this presentation on people having at least some level of understanding on what it is that we've added to the upgrade system this release. If you don't, you might feel a bit lost for some of the stuff that I'll cover. The other session was 200 level material, and this session will be 400 level material for the most part. So, once again, for those who haven't been in my previous sessions, I'm Sean Livingston. I'm the Senior Program Manager for Upgrade for the SharePoint product. I've been doing this for quite a while now. And so this release, we wanted to do a lot of improvements to give people more control of their upgrades, to make them safer, make them faster. And part of the things that we've added are somewhat complex under the covers. So this session will go into the complexities of some of the more tricky areas to describe. I could just sit there and try and say them out and how they work, and it would confuse people, so I'll use a few animations. I'll also do a little bit of a demo going through using some of the commands that you would use as an administrator to see what's going on with your throttles and your queues. And we'll cover a little bit about customizations. I'm not going to spend a lot of time through this as if it was a developer session. So if you're looking for that level of depth, that's something that I highly recommend seeking out some of the sessions that specifically cover customizations. For this particular session, though, I will cover a little bit about how they install and how you would have to manage them as if from an IT pro perspective, because that's probably what a majority of you would be concerned about. How do I actually get my customizations working on the environment? And then I'll just go through a few other pieces that are different or improved from 2010. So, as was mentioned in the previous session, the deferred site collection upgrade is the main piece that we invested in this release. And through that change, a whole bunch of different other things had to be adjusted within the product and new capabilities built. Now, I'm not going to go through this in depth here, just to know that it is a rather technical piece, and this flowchart is very, very low or very high level. What goes on under the covers is pretty deep. Lots of different operations, and the product group did an awful lot of work on this. When we originally proposed doing the deferred site collection upgrade, people were looking at us like we were crazy. You want to ship 14 2010 files on top of the new product at the same time. You want to give people a choice on when they do upgrade? You're really sure you want to do this? Are you sure you'll even be able to be successful? Well, we did a lot of work here, and it wasn't just my team. It was all the teams across all the product group. They put in a lot of hard work. Lots of bugs were fixed. A big focus was put on making sure that the 2010 experience continued to work within the product. Now, I'm sure you'll find a bug here or there. And if you do, we'd love to hear about it so we can fix them. But a fair amount of work went through this, and I'd say the results are pretty good. I've heard some good feedback from people, and I'm sure that if you get a chance to go and use this, you'll find that it's a pretty solid experience. Now, as I said, there's many pieces that are going on here, a lot of moving parts. But one of the pieces that you need to start with understanding deferred site collection upgrade, is the compatibility level. Now, if you did any work with visual upgrade in the last release, you remember there was the UI version. UI version could be 4, or UI version could be 3. When we were looking at the design for this deferred site collection upgrade, we looked really hard at visual upgrade, realized the challenges with it, and basically considered this as the spiritual successor for visual upgrade. Visual upgrade pieces are still there, but they don't actually work the same way anymore. There's still a UI version and other things, but it's basically just there to make sure we don't break compatibility with some of your customizations that may refer to the values that it exposes. But compatibility level is the value that replaces that UI version. And it's tracked at the main place that you will see this is the compatibility level of the site collection, because we are upgrading individual site collections from the 2010, the legacy UI experience, to the new 2013 experience. And we trigger that through upgrade commands that people can issue through the UI or PowerShell or et cetera. But this value gets changed, tracked and changed on the site collection. Now, you don't go in there and say, I want to change the compatibility level from 14 to 15. We don't allow that. You have to go through an upgrade command to make that actually occur. Now, the other side is, unlike visual upgrade, where you could create a site only as the new experience in 2010, you could only create a 2010 site collection, we actually have the vast majority, I won't say all of the 14 files, because there's some that just aren't relevant, and there's a couple pieces where they were taken out for, you know, really good reasons, but the vast majority of the features and the site definitions and the control templates and other pieces are actually there installed when you install the 2013 product. So if you go to your server and say, why is there a 14 directory here? It's because we've actually installed those 14 files as well into the system. And because we've done this, we can completely support you creating a 2010 experience site collection on this, as long as it doesn't use any of the features that we actually had to take out of the product, specifically web analytics or the PowerPoint broadcast system, if you had WAC installed on top, the Office web clients installed on top of your farm. But as long as it's not those couple of cases, you can create your 14 site collections. If you have your own site definition and you install it, you can create a site based on that 2010 site definition within this farm, within a farm that's based on 2015 product or the or 2013 product. Now, unlike visual upgrade, we are not tracking UI version down at each web, and they can be interchangeable or they can be changed differently from each other. Instead, it's all on the site collection. It's safer for a bunch of reasons. I know it seems like it reduces the flexibility, and yes, I agree it does. But one of the main things to consider here is we don't just have features at the web level, we have them at the site collection level as well. And as soon as we start allowing you to change back and forth at the web level versus the site collection, it starts getting really strange from a test matrix. And so we said, no, we're not going to do that. We'll only do it at the site collection level. Now, who knows what changes in the future, but I know for this particular release, that's exactly where we're drawing the line for the level of granularity on this. Now, some additional stuff here is that if you are using features, the features can only be the same compatibility level as the site collection or an earlier version of the features. For example, on a 2010 site collection, you cannot activate the new 2013 site features onto those site collections. It won't work. We don't allow it, and there's really good reasons for it. Once again, getting back to test matrix and other stuff. And that was actually one of the other things we saw with visual upgrade. Kind of an analysis of what people do is frequently they get really comfortable with what they see. And they get comfortable, but they still want this new thing and that new thing, but they don't want to change this UI stuff. And unfortunately, so many of the changes that we build in the product, especially when you think of like the new social experience, they're tied very closely with UI changes. So unlike in the last release with Visual Upgrade, where we could say, hey, you can switch, you know, your UI when you want, but you can kind of get some of the new features. And some teams really did a good job of hiding those, and some didn't do as good a job. So it's kind of this Frankenstein's monster of features in a 2010 site collection on the old product. But as we get into the new product, we have a very clean separation. Legacy features can work going forward, but if they are replaced by new features, those ones are the ones you see instead. Now, one of the things that also is introduced is something called compatibility range. We have two different compatibility levels on the farm. Well, which one do you want your folks to use? Do you only want them to use the new version? Do you want them to allow to only use the old version and not do any upgrades yet, except specific places that you tightly control as a farm administrator? You can do that. You do that through the web application's compatibility range value. And it's just by default, it's set to allow both 14 and 15. And compatibility range is used in two main ways. The first one is, can you create a site collection as an end user using self-service site creation, assuming you have it installed and activated? Can you, as an end user, create a 2010 site collection or a 2013 experience site collection? That's all triggered by this value. But the next piece is, if you can create a 2013 site collection, then by default, we're also expecting that your intent is that everybody can upgrade their site collections if they are in the legacy UI to the new one. And so therefore, if you allow creation of 15 site collections, by default, you're also allowing upgrade of site collections to the new experience. You have deeper control on this, and I'll talk about that a little bit when I go into the demo side of this. Now, an additional side is, and this is a little, it's a little trick, and it even got me because it wasn't how we initially spec'd it, but we made some changes because it just wasn't working right. Anybody who worked with the beta to release the public preview probably noticed that when you try to install a solution, there was something called add to latest. And when you used add to latest, what it did is, you know, figured out where to take your solution and put it. But the problem is it didn't give us the flexibility that people were asking for, so we made some changes. And I'll cover it a little bit later, but that command was replaced with a, and this is the trick, it was replaced with a compatibility level parameter, but reality is you can pass in a compatibility range value to it. So we'll cover that a little bit later. One last piece is that we also track the compatibility range value at the tenant level through site subscription values. We use this in our Office 365 product to control the rollout of when you get access to the new experience and new features. However, if you have a multi-tenant based solution within your environment, that's what you're using. And I know that's not the vast majority of you, but if you are, there is even a way of controlling individual tenants' compatibility ranges uniquely from each other using this same value. Now, as I said, compatibility range determines what you get to select for creating site collections. The template picker, self-service site creation, or from the central admin UI, which UI do you want to show? And if anybody saw the demo that I was doing the other day, I had site collections that I'd created in the Office 365 service. What I didn't show was creating one of those site collections, that same template picker experience of only show the old experience or only show the new one, was actually part of what I was showing, or what I had to go through in order to create those site collections. Now, the template picker as well is used for creating subwebs of a site collection. And what you will see here is a hard-coded string shows up. When you go to select to create a subweb of a site collection, it will not allow you to change the compatibility level. Yes, it's a trick that we immediately saw that people would want to try and find a way past the blockade that we had created. So it quite literally, it says, this template available to you is 2010 experience or 2013 experience, and it's determining this based on the site collection's own compatibility level. So you can't change that on the fly. Now, going into a little bit more of things that deeper commands, stuff that you might end up using as a farm administrator for managing your upgrade. There is, as I said, there's multiple properties. The compatibility range on the web application is one of them. But then there's also some other pieces you might want to do. For example, let's say you're really concerned about allowing everybody to go and start doing upgrades today, but you still want to allow some people to create site collections in 15 experience. Well, if you want to allow creating site collections in 15 experience, you can turn on the compatibility range, but you can set on each of the existing site collections, you can say, allow self-service upgrade, false. In which case, it doesn't pay attention to the compatibility range anymore for the individual upgrade capability of a site collection. You can turn it on, even if you say compatibility range says, I'm only allowing 14, so I'm only allowing the existing 2010 site collections to be created and used, and I will choose as a farm admin when to roll out some new stuff. You can still go to an individual site collection and say, allow self-service upgrade, true. In which case now you have direct tight control of individual places you roll this out to. And of course, then you say, I want to clear that. I just want it to go back and inherit from the default. Then there's this allow self-service upgrade setting. You just set that and it will clear the value and revert back to using the value that is exposed to the compatibility range, either at the web application or tenant level, depending on your environment. Now, the other piece that I covered a little bit on the other presentation was around our demo sites, creating a copy of a site collection so that you can do evaluation of your upgrade there before you ever actually do it for real on your existing working site collections. And that's also something you can control, whether people can do that or not. One of the things you can control is whether people even have this ability through the allow self-service upgrade evaluation property on the web application. And once again, just like the overrides available at the site collection level for whether you can upgrade or not, there's also parameters there for whether you can do upgrade evaluation or not. One little trick, by the way, if you cannot do allow self-service upgrade on the site collection, if for whatever reason person can't create a self-service or can't do self-service upgrade, they also can't do the preview capability, they create the evaluation site. It's an internal piece of logic that's preventing that. So even if it says it's true, doesn't mean it'll actually occur unless they can also upgrade. Because the whole intent for the preview sites isn't so they have another copy, it's so they have another copy that upgrades. Now, other last piece here is, what if I don't want people creating really big evaluation site collections? Well, one of the technical limitations of how we designed that feature is it makes a complete copy of site collection. It doesn't pick and choose some pieces and other pieces. That would be very, very complex to manage, never mind technically complex to build, and have a long bug tail. So instead, what we have is a value can say, I want to choose the maximum size. And the maximum size by default is 102/400 meg, so 100 gig basically in size. And if you want to, you can go back and change that to a much smaller value in order to restrict who's actually creating site collections or evaluation site collections. Now, aside from those deeper pieces of both those parameter values, and like I said, they're crucial to understand, because if you don't know compatibility level and don't understand compatibility range, then it starts getting really difficult to follow some of the other stuff that's going on inside the upgrade system. So the next complex thing after that is the upgrade throttle. One of the first things we hear from people is, hey, if you're going to do this, allow people to do upgrades when they want. Aren't you worried that it's going to cause your servers to melt? Aren't you worried it's going to cause outages? Well, yes. Yes, we are very worried about it. So what we decided to do is look very closely at where the major areas of concern were and build a queuing system, so a long line per database, and then filter how many people can go through that line at any point in time, and also filter how they get their site collection upgraded. And the way we did that is by setting up a couple of throttles within the product, which I will quickly demonstrate. So the main concern people have, what if we have too many upgrade actions all occurring at the same time? Well, the nightmare scenario is your memory goes through the roof and eventually runs out, and that the IOPS on the SQL database and possibly CPU and memory on the SQL also go up very heavily and cause impact on everybody else who's using the system. You're not going to let this happen. You could make it happen. I'm not going to try to demonstrate that, by the way. But let's not do that. So what we looked at and said, is there a way that we can filter these down to reduce how many that will occur at any point in time? And so what we decided to do, so once again, as it goes away, it reduces the impact. So what we decided to do is add throttles to the system. And so think of them as big speed limits. The speed limit on the database, and these aren't the default values, by the way, I'm just using this as an example. The actual speed limits are set to 10 at a content database and 5 per web application as a default. But you can change them on an individual web application. You can change it at the content database level. And so you could have a database that can handle more because of the geometry of the hard disks that it's sitting on, for example. Or you might have one where you can't do as many. Or maybe it's more mission critical and you're worried about any sort of performance impact, so you reduce it down to maybe just one at a time. So what happens when we have these throttles in place? Well, they apply in two possible ways. And the first one is, as connections go through, if they're allowed through the web application level, in the in-process upgrade limit, then they hit the database limit. And the way the upgrades work is it's first come, first served. The first person to go in and say, I want to upgrade a site collection, now gets that site collection queued in that database. Then the next one gets the next one, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We keep track of this. So we're keeping track of which site collections have been queued, which ones are in progress, which ones have failed, which ones have completed successfully. If they've failed unexpected, we can then pick that back up again and resume, possibly without the user ever really noticing, being barely inconvenienced, if at all. And the other side, though, is, in this case, too many requests have all come in at the same time. They've been allowed through the web application level, but then they got to the database, and the database said, nope, three's enough. That next one, that's just queued. It can't go any further. That doesn't mean that it's blocked. It just means that it will not occur immediately in the process of the web application. It'll instead be queued, and it will wait, and it'll either the web application will pick it up when one of the slots becomes free, or the timer job will pick it up and do it. Once again, remove the connections, all the performance gets reduced, or the performance impact gets reduced. Now, the other side. Too many connections trying to go through on a particular web application, and your limits there apply. In this case, it's just difficult to diagram the what the real numbers would look like, but setting a limit to one on the web application. It's one on every one of the servers that are running that same web application. But what you're getting instead is the first connection on the one server comes through, the database limit doesn't prevent it. It's wide enough to allow it. The next one that comes through is from a different server, once again, allows it. But that third request, the second one off the first server, it gets blocked because it says, no, too many in progress. I'll queue and I will wait. And if the user stays on the upgrade status page, it'll just stay there, queued, waiting, waiting, waiting. It'll refresh every minute. And then eventually, as long as the other site got unblocked out of the queue, then the site will then pick up. Because as I said, it's first come, first serve, based on the history. And that's what the timer job does too. If you say, I want to upgrade my site collection, and then as soon as it starts the upgrade, you close your web browser, well, what you've done is you've terminated the in-process upgrade, which means it's an unexpected failure. Unexpected failure. I will stop moving my hands around. With this unexpected failure, you don't have a browser looking at this site anymore in the upgrade page. The process isn't doing the upgrade. The timer will pick it up, and it will pick that one up because it's the most recent one, or the oldest one in the queue, and then it'll do that upgrade. Okay. Well, now that you have this throttle and you understand that it exists, how do you actually control this? How do you get insight into it? Well, first off, I'm actually going to cover the right-hand side of the slide, which is the throttles that I was talking about. In-process upgrade throttles. Those are specifically what are the throttles on the web application processes. It doesn't cover any other type of process. It doesn't cover timer. It doesn't cover PowerShell. It only covers web application processes. These are the throttles that you can set, the limits for what we will use. For example, we won't allow a site collection that's too big to be upgraded in process because we don't want that to consume too much resources on that web front end. So if they exceed the limits that are there, we say, no, we'll just queue it, and that'll get upgraded by the timer service in the background. If, on the other hand, you're concerned about how many can be done at the same time, there's the two, the first one being the upgrade application pool session limit, and that's the one that says how many for this particular application pool can occur at the same time per server. And then the last one being the database connection. And you notice that the one for the web application is tracked on each individual web application instance. The one for the database is per content database, so you get that control. But what about as an administrator yourself, as a farm administrator? How do I get control? How do I see what's going on? And that's where we come to several options here. First off, if you want insight into the queue, there's this get site upgrade, SP site upgrade session, this command that will list all of the waiting items in the queue by default. But you can optionally go in and say, I also want to see which ones have been completed or which ones failed. And it can list that information out as well as part of the data. Or you can say, I don't want to show any of the waiting ones. I just want to show the completed ones. You can do that. The other side you can do here is say, hey, this one site collection, for whatever reason, keeps failing at the same place and gets picked up by the timer job, and it's blocking all the future upgrades in this queue. How do I evict it from the queue? And you do that by calling this remove SP upgrade, SP site upgrade session command, which just basically says, as long as it's not in the middle of upgrading right now, take it out of the queue, and then it won't ever come up in the queue again until somebody kicks off upgrade fresh for that site collection. This is unlikely to occur, but we put this in because it's a possibility. We can't cover every possibility and say it'll always work 100%. So we left this in, put this in specifically for the case of queue maintenance if you do get stuck, because we don't want people going and editing databases. It's completely unsupported, as I'm sure you all know. Now, the last one here is upgrade SP site. Now, that's the new command that we added in order to upgrade site collections as a farm administrator. You can do build-to-build upgrade of site collections with this command, or you can do version-to-version upgrade. When you do a version-to-version upgrade, it changes the compatibility level. It's the way that you change from 14 to 15 compatibility level on your site collections. But it has some pieces specifically related to the throttle as well. By default, this command allows you to upgrade any of the site collections if you're a farm administrator. However, it does by default also honor the queue, the database throttle aspect of the queue. So if you have too many sessions going on, even if you're doing them through PowerShell, by default it'll say, no, I can't let this next session in, I can't get a lock, because the database throttle has limited you. But you can say, you know, I know what I'm doing. You've heard this before, right? So I know what I'm doing. I'm going to bypass this throttle. I'm going to make an upgrade anyways. Okay, we'll let you do that. I mean, as I already said, the limit on the database by default is 10. That's not terribly aggressive. Unless you're running on pretty anemic hardware or very overtaxed hardware, you probably find that, you know, 10 may be a perfectly acceptable limit, and you could still do 10 more, possibly. Your results may vary depending on your hardware and your environment. But if you do say, hey, I need to get this one site collection through right now, the CEO is calling and says, I need this now. I'm on fire if I don't have this. So of course, you go and you do the upgrade and you get through the site collection. Now, just as a side note, going a little bit off the script for a moment, I know nobody's asked me this so far in the previous session, but I'm sure if I didn't say it now, somebody would ask me at the end, which is, what's the performance going to be like when we actually upgrade a site collection? And what we've seen is numbers that, when we're doing version-to-version upgrade, we've seen numbers that can range, in the average, being under 5 minutes. We've seen site collections, personal sites, for example, upgrade in just around 45 seconds to a minute, in many cases, on the hardware we're using. Now, like I said, hardware, your results may vary depending on. But the one other side to note is if you have a site collection that would take a long time to upgrade in the past, it'll probably take a long time to upgrade now, too. There isn't anything that magically makes all of the burden of a very deep, very heavily customized, very feature-rich site collection, and by deep I mean many, 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 many webs, many, many site document libraries and lists and feature activations in it. The more stuff you have in the site collection, the more impact it can have. Now, I'm not saying, hey, I have a site collection that has one document library and it's got 10 million items in it. That's not what I'm talking about. There may be an upgrade action that will pivot on that particular axis, but you'll find it's more likely on the number of webs, number of features, lists that you have within the particular site collections. Now, the one side on that is, on the upper end, if you are have one of these really heavy, expensive site collections, it could take you hours to upgrade. It could take you longer than hours to upgrade. But you probably knew that already if you upgraded your site collection from 2007 to 2010. So that's the one thing I would say, pay very careful attention. If you have any of these anomalous, really big, really gnarly site collections, those ones you probably want to handle as a farm administrator on a downtime that you communicate with people, instead of letting the site collection administrator themselves choose when to do that. So those would be one of those site collections that you say upgrade, allow self-service upgrade equals false on, and then you as a farm administrator work with them to deal with it. Now, other thing here is you can say, hey, I want to queue this upgrade. I don't want to do all the site collections and wait for them one after another. Last session I had somebody ask, is there a command to automatically upgrade all the site collections when I upgrade the database? And the answer is no, there isn't. But there's an ability for you to do it. In so much as after I've upgraded the database to 2013, I can go and I can say, get all the site collections, and I want to pipe them into the upgrade queue. And they can either upgrade immediately in the PowerShell session, which means if you have 1,000 site collections and they'll take a minute each, it's 1,000 minutes serially. Whereas if you say queue only, then it'll send them into the queue. Now the timer will process them serially if they're all in the same database. If you have multiple timer services, they'll process them in parallel, one per database. Or you can have more PowerShell sessions and upgrade them. So you can chew that problem down to smaller pieces by parallelism using this ability. So I'm going to do a really quick demo here, hopefully. Okay. So in this particular case, I have an environment that I've pre-created with several pieces of site collections. So I'm just going to do a quick thing. Come on. Learn to spell. Okay, so I have a bunch of site collections here that you can see are in 14 mode. You can see that there is one in 15 mode as well, or a couple in 15 mode. The compatibility level is something that we show by default in the getSPSite command now, just because that it is such a predominant thing that you might be interested in, that we made sure that it's part of the default set of columns that are available in this command. Now, if I go in to want to upgrade a bunch of site collections, well, first off, I'll take a look at a site collection here. So here is a meeting site, or sorry, it's not a meeting site. Oh, that's why. It's not a meeting site. Here is a demo site. I made a mistake and created the wrong type of template. Okay. I'll go to this one instead. So here's a team site. And this is one that's been upgraded. It's 15 experience. But I could just as easily have one that is in the 14 experience still, in the 2010 user experience. And if you saw my previous presentation, I allowed a person to go in and click and do upgrade and start doing this process. Well, if I go to do that, then this site collection, it's going into the upgrade queue now. Well, what do I want to see? Well, what's going on in this particular database? So I'm going to go and say get SP site upgrade session info and the content database. Now I could actually say I could say a specific content database, or I could say show in progress and show completed, and there we go. The in-process upgrade picked it up faster than I was able to do this, because the default is the show in progress, or the default for the show session info is to only show ones that are waiting. So it went from waiting to in progress faster than I was able to type out that command. But there is information on this about, so the most recent one that's in here, the site collection that I just did the upgrade on, it tells me that it was a version upgrade. It tells me how many warnings and errors I've had. Gives me more information about the site. And you can track down to what's going on with this particular site collections upgrade through this process. Now, the other thing I can do is, as I said, I could upgrade all the site collections at the same time. So I could say get SP site, and I could pipe it to upgrade SP site. And there's two types of upgrades for upgrade SP site. The default is to do a build-to-build. The specific one to upgrade to the next UI version is version upgrade. Now, I'm going to queue these only so that it adds a whole bunch to the queue all at once instead of going through it one at a time. And the thing is, if I try and re-queue them, no problem. It doesn't make it newer, by the way. Trying to re-queue it isn't going to bump the date to the newest one. It's not going to make it faster. It's just going to queue them all and wait. Now, if I go back to the upgrade session info, and in this case, I just want to show the default. And you can see here's each of them. Here's each of the ones already listed. It's not really nice in this level of display here, but you can see that there is all these particular sites are queued, and you can watch as they then leave the queue. So if I did the same thing where I did the completed, show in progress and the show completed, then you can see as the ones that have the XML session object information, those are the ones that are currently being processed through or have completed. So if I just keep refreshing this over time, as you can see, there was 3 in the last queue. Now there's 4 that have been done, and it'll just keep going through. If I want to eject a particular site collection from the queue, then get the... I could take, for example, this particular site. I'll just do it this way. Stop. Lots of stuff here. There we go. And then if I say, sites demo 7, for example. Did I spell it wrong? SBC upgrade. Oh, that's why. Good eyes. Did I still do it wrong? Oh, that's why. I did it wrong. This is what happens when you stay up trying to. When you try to go over this over and over in the background, it ends up that it bites you when you try to actually demo it. Well, I can't easily show you that that's different, but if you went back and somehow had a super sharp eye and saw that GUID is now missing, I was able to remove it from the queue. The only way I can't remove it from the queue is if it turns out that it's already in progress or upgrading. Okay. So those are the key things I wanted to show. And just as a side note, if I look at, for example, where is it? Sorry. And we're going to play this game again. I'm going to do a trick here just to make it easier for me. Okay, so there's that site. It hasn't been upgraded. It's definitely not in the queue because I evicted it. Now, if I go in and take this particular site collection, one thing that, as I mentioned earlier, there is the allow self-service upgrade. That's that parameter. You'll notice that that I didn't actually set this to true. This is where it inherited it from the compatibility level. If I wanted to prevent this from being able to upgrade it, I could have set this to false. But as a farm administrator, if I said, I'm going to upgrade this, it would ignore this value. It still would upgrade the site collection anyways. So if you think that I set it and then it won't allow me to even upgrade by accident, it won't do that. The farm admin has a lot more control here. So just wanted to make this obvious for what's going on there as far as the control of the queue pieces. Now, I'll switch back. And we'll use the other computer. Okay. Now, the other piece that gets confusing is the upgrade evaluation site collections. What's going on behind the scenes? How is the performance going to be impacted as we are doing these? Now, one of the concerns associated with that is this going to cause a large amount of performance impact making all these copies? Well, it could. It absolutely could. So there's restrictions, as I said earlier, on how big a site collection would be that you can make copies of for upgrade evaluation. And you may want to set that more aggressively than we have out of the box. The other thing is, when we do make copies, it is going to take additional storage space temporarily, though they do expire eventually. The default is 30 days after creation, and you have control over that as well if you want to make it shorter or longer. And even, by the way, if a site collection has been, an evaluation site collection has been created, you can go in and manually change, as a farm admin, you can go in and manually change its expiry date sooner, or you can make it later if you want. Side note is if it expires and goes into the recycle bin, if you restore it, the timer job will pick it up and delete it again, unless you go in and say, hey, I want to extend its expiry date. So just a little word of warning, if you are wondering why it just suddenly deletes it every day, you keep restoring it, keep deleting it, that's why. Okay, so this is high level of how it's working. I'm not going to read this though. Instead, I'm going to show it. I'm going to go through the individual steps from a diagram or animation. And so there's two ways that creating a site, an evaluation site collection works. One is if you have a snapshot capable SQL server, and by that I mean that the SQL server allows SQL snapshotting, and two, that you do not have mirroring turned on. If you do, then this won't work. It will break on you. And yes, I want to see us get a fix so that it doesn't break on you, it just tells you it won't. But instead it will throw an exception at this point in time. Okay, so the user goes and requests a site an evaluation site collection. It's an existing site collection that they are a site collection administrator for. Next, because that has been requested for eval, within the next 24 hours or so, at least 24 hours within the default of the timer jobs schedule, the create evaluation site collection job will run, and it's going to then go through and create a snapshot of the entire content database where any evaluation sites have been requested. So if it's just one, it makes a snapshot. If it's 30, it makes a snapshot, just one. Once it's made that snapshot, then it iterates through each of those site collections. And what it's doing is it's making a clone of that site collection. So basically, it's a lot like, down in the depth of how this product works, this part of the product works is, it's very much like the move SP site command, copying data from one set of tables to another set of tables between two databases on the same SQL server. However, what it's also doing here is it's transforming the URL as it's doing this copy. So it's making sure that the URL is different. It also is making sure the site collection ID is different. And it needs to do that, otherwise it wouldn't work. Especially because, as you notice here, the default here is it's creating the copy in the exact same database as where the source site collection came from. And if they had the same ID, they would fight. Okay, now the next step is making sure that the source site collection is aware that it has an evaluation partner. And the reason it does that is so that you don't keep requesting more evaluation sites. The next thing it does is go through and add that site collection to the sitemap so that now you can actually get to the site collection. So far, it's just basically a pre-orphaned site collection. And now you're bringing it back in, making it part of the sitemap and therefore visible. It also marks it as an evaluation site collection. If you go down to the individual SP site at the object model level, you'll see is evaluation. It'll say true, in this case, for that set and for the copy. And then, depending on how you requested it, it'll also queue this for upgrade. But it doesn't upgrade it in the creation process. Then that'll happen in a separate piece shortly. And the last thing the timer job does after it's made all these copies for that particular database is it then goes to try and clean up the snapshot. If for whatever reason it's prevented from cleaning up the snapshot and it runs again in the future, then it will also try to clean up the snapshot. So it's not going to try and leave all kinds of snapshots around forever and ever. Now, at some later time, usually within about a minute after the site collection is created, because that's the default amount of time for the upgrade timer job, it will come through and queue that or take that site collection that's been queued for upgrade now, run through the upgrade process, and now you have a site collection that's completed in its upgrade. Now, I'm not showing it here, but if you have set to send an email to the site collection administrator who requested it, then at this point in time, it'll also queue up an email that will get sent to that person saying, hey, your site collection has been created and it's been upgraded. Here you go to go and take a look at it. Now, the alternate here is if you don't have snapshot capability. And it's very, very much the same thing. And that is, the user goes and requests it. Two, the timer job goes or starts. and makes a backup of the site collection, not the whole database, just the site collection. Now, one of the side effects of this, of course, is it's a site collection backup. It's limited to the maximum size of site collection backup you can even possibly do, which I would say never push beyond 85 gigabytes in size. If you're pushing beyond 85 gigabytes for a site collection backup, you're probably going to fail in either the backup or the restore operation. However, you probably don't have many of those. Or if you do, you're probably not using this feature to do evaluation on them. Next, it takes that backup and it restores it to a new URL. So it gets a new GUID, it gets a new URL as part of the restore operation. Then, does all the same pieces that it would already if it had been a backup. Sets in the sitemap, makes them paired, gets it all ready, and then lastly, cleans up that backup. And once again, if it was queued for upgrade, the timer job will queue through it, say, hey, I want to upgrade the site collection, and you're at the exact same state. So, evaluation, site collection expiry. The way this works is there is, it's sent to the recycle bin, as I've already mentioned a couple times, but it has this value on the web application called days to expire. And you specify how many days to expire the site collection. At that particular point in time, or when we go to create the evaluation site, it takes now, in code, right now, the particular time that I've created this copy, adds in the days to expire value, and then says that's the new date. That's the date it will expire on. And then that date, the evaluation expiry on the site collection, that's the one that we keep monitoring in the background to whether we're going to clean this up or not, or when we're going to clean this up, as well as when people will be notified that it's about to expire. We have some ways to tell a person, hey, it's going to expire in 3 days. You should go and make sure that there's nothing, like that you're okay with that. Now, we did not build any capability. It's kind of an oversight, but we didn't end up building a capability to allow a person to say, I want to extend how long this evaluation is available for. Unlike the previous not-in-use deleted sites feature from the past, this doesn't have that capability. But as a farm administrator, if somebody calls you and says, hey, I need to keep this around for another 3 weeks, and you are okay with it, you can go in and change the evaluation expiry to a different date, and then it'll expire later instead. So next big thing that people want to know about is customizations in regards to this new capability. Well, the first piece I want to say is your legacy customizations, in almost all cases, should work without modification while you're using 2010 mode. So if you take your customizations, your site definitions, your features, and you install them onto the 2013 farm using the defaults, because they were built for the previous release, they should install to the appropriate directories and just keep working. However, there is times where you want to use those same features you'll want to use them in 2013 experience as well, or you may want to have new versions of features. And I'll talk a little bit about some of the things that you'll want to take a look at here. So first off is installation. How do I get these customizations installed to both 14 and 15 directories? How do I make them work for both 2010 and 2013 experience modes? And the way you can do that is with the install SP solution. As you remember earlier, I said that there's a value called compatibility level, but that you can actually pass in a compatibility range object. Well, in this case, if I say 14, 15, then it takes that solution and installs it into both the 14 and 15 directories as needed, so it can support both 2010 and 2013 experience. If, however, you don't specify any compatibility level on the install SP solution command, it will analyze the solutions manifest and make the best choice it can based on the information available. That information is the SharePoint product version value that's inside the manifest of the solution. So if it has a value and it's, if it doesn't have a value, or if the value is 12 or 14, then it will not install it into the 15 directory. It'll only put in the legacy 14 directory. But if it says 15, it'll install into the 15 directory. Once again, you can override that with that previous value that I mentioned. Now, this table that you see here are the possible values you can pass in for the compatibility range information that you're using in the compatibility level parameter. And I'll continue on. In regards to what happens in these cases, now, anybody who hasn't paid close attention to what goes on with solutions when they get deployed probably won't mind this information. It's just trivia. For those who are very concerned about where all their files go when you go and do a deployment, this is what's happening here. The solution, for example, in this case, a legacy solution, as part of the installation command, it's being examined for all of its various components, and those pieces are being put in various directories to support the proper functioning of that feature. So in this case, various pieces that are appropriate to rendering in 14 experience, in the 2010 experience, are going to the 14 directory. And the stuff that's, let's say it's a feature that's for central admin, it doesn't go there, it goes into the 15 directory. A new web service goes into the 15 directories. New resources go into the 15 directories. Assemblies go into the common global assembly cache. And by the way, the far set on the left-hand side is the how those folders are actually exposed within IIS with virtual directories. So what if I said compatibility level equals 15? With a 14 solution. I just want it to show up in 15 experience. Maybe I don't even have 2010 experience on my environment now. Everybody's moved past it. Well, I can specify that compatibility level equals 15 on the install solution command. And now you see that it doesn't send those all to the 14 directories. It just sends them into the 15 directories as needed. It's just treating it like a 15 solution as it normally would any 15 solution. And then, notice no functional difference really here between the last slide and this slide. The only major difference you'll see between these two is the title and that SharePoint product version value. And that SharePoint product version value, if you haven't specified anything, it's automatically going into the 15 directory. Now, just a sec, I'm gonna do something a little bit out of order here. One thing that's important to note is the dotted lines going to resources, the box that's about halfway down the screen in the middle, is you'll notice that resources are, for features, are going to, in all these different cases, the resources are always going into the resources directory. It's in the 15 directory. It's not in the 14 directory. So even if you install a 2010 solution, those resources are going to the 15 resources directory. Now, that can cause a little bit of confusion if you try to install two conflicting versions of a feature where you've massively changed the resources. So one of the things, and I have a slide for it later, but I'll just say it now, is you want to address that by making sure that your new solution supersedes the old resources and allows them to continue to function, or you'll find that you can break your solution between 2010 and 2013 experience. So this is the one major caveat I would say you want to pay attention to, because we only have one resources directory that we look at for the globally installed resources. Now, if they are feature resources that are installed along with your feature, they'll be in the feature directory, no problem. It's only when you're creating global resources where this becomes a particular problem. Obviously, the reason I call this out is because the product group, when we're building this, we have a lot of global resources, and so this is something that we did run into, and that's why we had to design around this capability. Okay. The other piece here is this fallback. If you've gone in and installed your solutions and you're working in the 2010 experience, there's nothing to fall back to. It's just in the 2010 directory, unless you've manually created a 12 directory for it to go and fall back to, which you don't need to worry about. However, when you are in the 2013 experience, if a feature doesn't exist, it will attempt to fall back to the previous version's feature directory. So if you have let's say, some nav links or other pieces that you're, or action elements that you're adding, then it can get those from that previous version. However, you more than likely don't want to rely on feature fallback because of this second entry. And that is in regards to ASPX pages inside feature fallback. And that is, if you go into the layouts directory where ASPX pages normally live, where a lot of people install their ASPX pages with their features, they are going to be version specific. which means if you install a new ASPX page into the layouts directory for 2010 experience, but your site's actually in the 2013 experience, if you try to hit that ASPX page, then you're trying to use the 2010 layouts directory. But you really want the 2015 or the 2013 version of the layouts directory. And there's an internal redirector that will force you to the new one. Little trick, by the way, if you wanted to find out, hey, am I running on a 15 farm or not, is if you went to your site collection and went to layouts or underscore layouts and then went to settings.aspx, then it should render something, assuming you have rights to see it. However, if your site is in 15 mode, it would say underscore layouts 15/settings.aspx. So what if you trick the system and instead say underscore layouts 15/settings.aspx? If it comes back with a complete failure, it means that you aren't running on 15 farm. If, however, it redirects you, you're on a 2013 farm. Just a little trick if you're ever helping somebody over the phone and trying to identify that. That's a way you can find that out. Now, one last thing here is that site definitions don't fall back. If you want a site definition to continue to work in 2013, install that solution that includes the site definition into the 2013 directories as well, into the 15 directories on the file system. If you don't, the pages will not render, the site will not render, and further, we will block you from being able to upgrade that site collection because it doesn't make sense to upgrade you into a state that will be 100% broken. So if you want those to work, just make sure you install them to the appropriate support directory. And this is what's going on behind the scenes at kind of a diagram level. 15 requests go into the 15 features and fall back as necessary. 14 ones only go into the 14 and never fall forward into the 15 directory. Now, one thing I do want to call out here is if you have a new feature in 15 experience, in the 2013 experience, then it won't show up for the 14 site collections. But it is possible for features that aren't in the 2013 in the 15 directories to show up for a 15 site collection if a person wants to activate them there. And one last thing that we made an improvement here. I gave some advice to various people in the past, and it turned out that we had a bug that we have fixed this release. And that bug was, ideally, sometimes you want to get rid of a feature. And when you want to get rid of that feature, you may actually want to do some sort of cleanup operation. Maybe as it does its upgrade, you want it to go and get rid of some artifacts that it left behind and then clean itself up, remove itself from the list of features. Sounds good, but it didn't work in any version prior to this version. So in this version, if you say, if you have an upgrade section of your feature that says, as part of its operation, remove me from the list of activated features on this site, it'll succeed and it won't break the upgrade. Whereas before we fix that bug, it actually would have broken the upgrade, not in a serious way, it just would have failed it. And then if you resumed, it would just continue on. But we fixed that particular bug so that you can actually do that. If you want to get rid of a certain 2010 feature as you upgrade site collections to 2013 experience, this is a way you can do it. I've already covered about the customization resource files, so I'm not going to go through this again. One thing I didn't mention, though, is in regards to the web parts, and the web parts use the WP resources directory, and once again, that's global. Now, one other thing, and this is, some people won't like this, but in order to improve security and, well, in order to improve the development around security, what we decided to do is not support partially trusted code solutions. Now, this is not saying we don't support the sandbox. I want to be very clear about that. What I'm saying is if you tried to install a solution onto the file system as partially trusted into the bin directory, then that capability doesn't work anymore. Instead, when you go to install it that way, it'll say you need to install it as full trust. Now, the reason that we're doing that is because, well, there's a bunch of reasons why we did that. But the one thing that that does have a ramification is that you may have a script that automatically tries to install and it may fail at this particular point. So it's something to pay attention to. If you have bin deployed partially trust solutions onto the file system, this is an area to look at. But I just want to be very clear, sandbox solutions, they still work. They'll still keep working in your 2010 experience. They should still keep working in your 2013 experience. And they shouldn't require any change to keep working. Next thing that you have to pay attention to is claims. Now, you already had the ability to do a claims upgrade in the previous version in 2010, but there's been problems. You know, people have had some challenges with that. The team that was working on claims in relation to upgrade made some improvements to make it a little bit more resilient this release. And they also, at our behest, added in some a new check so that if you go to attach a database that has users who haven't been migrated yet, or that the users do not match the particular authentication provider you're using, the claims provider or authentication type, it'll actually tell you. So that you have some effectively orphaned users. They can't log in to use the site based on the current web app authentication mode until you go resolve that problem. Now, just as a few things to note though is, since we're making you build out a new 2013 farm, you're not upgrading your in-place one from 2010. That capability doesn't exist. So if you are using claims, when you install the claims providers, please make sure you use the exact same provider names, because otherwise there's a mismatch. They don't match up. So you want to be very careful about that. Anybody who's heard me talk before on Monday or otherwise knows that I recommend that you do a survey of your existing environment first and understand what you have installed. This is one of the things you want to note. What were the IDs, what were the names of my claims providers that I was using? Now, one other thing that's worth noting here is when you create a web application in 2013, it will default to claims. You have to go and specify additional parameters to choose not to create it in claims mode. You can probably get from that decision, we really want you to go to claims. We really do. I think that that's really the long-term way that we'll be doing authentication is claims-based, whether it be SAML or other pieces behind the scenes. And although you can keep using the legacy auth mode, Windows auth, for example, it's not really what I would recommend you doing. I don't think anybody in the product group would say, yes, please don't use claims auth. They would all be saying, use claims auth. So if I could just make everybody aware, as part of your upgrades, consider doing a migration to claims, or consider doing your migration to claims before you do your upgrade of your farm. I wouldn't recommend trying to do them both at the exact same time. It just adds more confusion that really you could avoid if you do in two separate steps. So this wasn't in the original deck, but I've added it because I've heard some questions. In regards to build-to-build upgrade, well, this session very much has talked about version upgrade, but what about build-to-build upgrades? Well, one of the things that we've done now as part of this deferring site collection upgrades for version to version, well, we also can do that in build to build. If you upgrade a database, you can say skip the children. So skip B2B children. And what will happen is it'll upgrade the scheme of the database, but it won't upgrade any of the site collections as part of that operation. So why would you do this? Well, you would do it to reduce the amount of downtime that all those users perceive. I'll give you an example. If I have a database that has 1,000 site collections in it, and the delta between my previous build and my new build, let's say the first CU after RTM, is very small, almost no database upgrade, a couple stored procedure changes maybe, something that should take minutes. If I also had to go through and iterate through all the site collections, then that might take half an hour. Whereas by skipping the site collections immediately, I can make that database upgrade and the amount of time users experience the outage to be only about a minute. And I can even go further than that if I can support the snapshot capability on SQL. And I can make them experience 1 minute of read-only time. No outage other than read-only in that case. And that's that second piece. But once I've gotten the database upgrade, then I can go through and say, hey, get all those SP sites and upgrade them. And I don't pass in the version upgrade in this case, unless you plan on getting everybody to 2013 all at once. And of course, you can queue them as I demonstrated earlier. Now, one other piece here is if you use Project Server, you probably noticed in the last release, we supported this capability called N-1 bits to database backwards compatibility. We didn't always call it that. We sometimes just call it N-1, but N-1 is thrown around a lot, so it's kind of confusing. But when you patched a farm, you weren't always forced to immediately upgrade. And I bet for many of you out there, you have put a patch onto your farm before and not run upgrade, and your farm's still running. And that's something that was built in 2010, and we've supported that through the product. We had a few challenges here and there. specifically in a couple places where we had to break the backwards compatibility. But one of the teams who couldn't support it last release was Project Server. And they made a really concerted effort this release to go and improve that story. So this is something that they put a lot of work into. It's not, it's very technically challenging to be able to do this successfully, especially in products as complex as SharePoint and Project Server. But they were able to do that this release. So it gives you more flexibility. You can patch on Tuesday. You can upgrade on Wednesday instead of, or upgrade on Sunday. Don't have to upgrade on the day that the patch Tuesday comes out. But you don't have to take immediate outage immediately, and that's the key thing that we're trying to avoid here. One thing I will say, though, is if you do go into a state where you defer doing the upgrades, don't plan on never doing the upgrade. Plan on doing the upgrade soon. Days or weeks, not months or years. Just want to make that clear for everybody. Something you may want to do as a take-home, when you go back to your farm, go and check and see if your farm is in backwards compatibility mode. If it is, I'd recommend you upgrade. If you applied Service Pack 1 to your RTM farm, then it's probably working fine, except that some of the new stuff that was added in SP1 isn't functional, like the recycle bin, or the site recycle bin. Until you do the upgrade of the databases, it can't actually activate. So just something to take home, take a look, and get aware of that capability, because that's something that we will keep relying on within the product. It's very important to us. It's very important to us to help you, and it's something that we also rely on in our Office 365 product. We need to reduce the amount of downtime people experience in the service. This is one of the ways we do that. And those same things that we would use are available to you as well. One other thing that we discovered and fixed, this I won't say is an improvement so much as it's a bug fix, but it was a pretty complex piece to create. Now, the problem is when we added Service Pack 1 in the recycle bin, we gave you the ability to delete a subweb and then restore it later. But what happens if between the day you delete, you apply a cumulative update and then run upgrade, and then you restore that web? Now what? Well, now that web is potentially slightly behind in upgrade state than the rest of the webs in that site collection. And there's no safe way to fix that. There really isn't. So what we decided to do is separate out. In previous release, we had something called site sequences, and they could go through and iterate through a site collection and do various upgrade operations. Well, what we developed this release is we took some of those pieces that iterated through each subweb in a site sequence and said, that doesn't really make sense to be there. Let's add them to their own specific type of sequence called a web sequence, and we will call that per each web and do the upgrades. But by doing it, it means we now track the version of upgrade on the web as well. So if you've deleted the web and into the recycle bin, and then you do an upgrade on the database and the site collections, and then you restore the web, it'll detect that it's out of step with the rest of the site, and it will immediately trigger an upgrade for that site collection, which will include that web at that particular point in time. The rest of the site collection won't have to do anything, but that web will then get updated. So this makes the recycle bin much, much safer, especially if you have your recycle bin set for a wider period of time, and that people have deleted stuff right before cumulative updates or service packs. Matter of fact, it even works if you've deleted a web while it's in 2010 experience mode. Upgrade your site collection to the new experience and then restore it. Then it will say, hey, wait, I'm still in the 14 version numbers. I need to upgrade to the 15. It'll run through all those steps for that web. So it makes it a lot safer for the recycle bin by this change. Unfortunately, because of the depth of this change, we can't backport it to the previous product. I wish we could, but we can't. So I'm just going to go through a couple other things. This will go through a little bit faster. First, I mentioned it a little bit in the previous presentation, but one of the things we support now, and we haven't really supported this in previous versions, is if you have a federated services farm separate from your content farm, you can upgrade your federated farm to 2013 before you upgrade any bits on your content farm. This allows a 2010 content farm can talk to a 2013 services farm for federation and consume those services, your profile, your metadata, your search. It's available to you, those federated services you can consume. And of course, you know, search can go and talk to your 2010 farm and index it and otherwise. But at some later point, when you upgrade your 2010 content farm to 2013, or you do the side-by-side and upgrade the databases, then you'll still be able to use this capability because you're upgrading with services that are already on 2013, already having that latest capability. they're not being exposed any new features to you in 2010, but when you upgrade the databases, the content databases, and later upgrade them to 2013 experience, you'll see that they have that history. They've been there for even longer time because of it. This gives you more flexibility when you're trying to go through your upgrades, especially for really large environments that are separate into multiple farms. However, one key thing is, please do not attempt to do this in reverse. We do not support a 2013 content farm talking to a 2010 services farm. Absolutely do not support that. So just want to make that note. By the way, if you're doing build-to-build upgrades, we recommend that same order of operations. We weren't always clear on that. In 2007, we were pretty clear that that was the direction. In 2010, we kind of didn't focus on this. In 2013, we're saying, no, please always upgrade the services farm first. Please always patch the services farm first. That's the order of operations you want to follow. And here is the order of operations, and I won't go through with it. But if you do want to know this information, TechNet has some great examples on this that you can go through and read and use in your processes. Now, last couple slides I'm just going to cover here are some miscellaneous pieces. One thing that we've had a lot of requests in the past is, hey, you have an upgrade. I want to know how long it's going to, or I want to know what upgrade actions are there so I can figure out what's going on behind the scenes. So we had tools in the past, but they were internal to the product group only. This release, we added two commands. One of them is get SP upgrade actions, and it'll go through and say, here is all the upgrade actions that I know of. It does internal reflection on the server and figures it all out, all the sequences, all the actions, all the feature upgrades, and it lists them all out in a big set of XML objects or objects in PowerShell that you could then dump to a spreadsheet and use. The other piece that we have, though, is if you say, well, I want to know what upgrades are still pending, not just the upgrade is needed on this particular object, but what is it actually going to, what objects, what actions are still have to be upgraded, then you have this get SP pending upgrade actions command. But you have to pass in an object, like, for example, a content DB or a web application object to it. And when you do, as long as that object is an iUpgradable object, for those developers out there who understand that, it will say, hey, I'm going to give you the list of all of the upgrade actions that are pending for it, and it'll spit those out. They're the same type of information as the previous command, but it's targeted to only a specific object that you pass in. And here's an example of the type of information that you might see as part of it. I've changed the formatting a little bit only to make it more readable on a deck, but you know, some good information to help you, especially if you are trying to figure out, for example, hey, that new patch that we just released, does it add any upgrade actions? Well, this will tell you. This is how you can find that out. One last thing. I covered a bit about notification capabilities that we added in the product in the last or in this release in my previous session. But one of the things I want to call out specifically is something that we did that was not in the beta. This is only added in as of RTM, is this thing called maintenance windows. And the reason we added this is because there's times where you want to tell people in advance, hey, we're going to be upgrading the database on Tuesday. You're going to have an hour's worth of outage, or you're going to have 5 minutes of outage, or there's going to be some intermittent glitches for you. This is how you can display that message to users. Canned messages translated to all the languages for the language packs you have available. People can go and see. You can't edit the messages. That's not currently something that we're supporting. But you do have control through this new capability. It's on the SP web application to say, I want to display a message for this small window of time that tells about a specific upgrade for an even shorter window of time and the impact, which is even shorter still. And if you want, if you need to show more information, you can put in a maintenance link. And that maintenance link basically just says, go put in a hyperlink on the message to send somebody somewhere else, and they can go and see more detail. So with that, I'm concluding the deep dive on upgrade. And I welcome any questions and feedback. And of course, thanks.